My grandfather's farm, where I grew up in the years just after the war, was perched nearly 1,000 feet up on the flank of a hill. The squat old buildings crouched against the wind, deep in snow in winter, half hidden in summer by a forest of nettles. It was a hard, thin living. My grandparents got by with toil, faith, and the helping hand of government subsidies. Each season brought recurring anxieties, but for most of the time they enjoyed the peace, more common then than now, of people who, expecting little, have seen the years come and go with some blessings and without too much pain.
To everything there is a season and a time, to every purpose under heaven.
My grandmother would quote.
A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted.
The lives of the three of us, and of the animals we kept, were governed by time and season. Springtime, when the lambs were born. Summer, when we brought in the hay. Autumn, when the grown lambs went to market. Winter, when we carried out feed across the frost-bound earth and sat snug in the evenings, hearing the wind in the chimney.
A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away.
19 shillings? £1.
That makes £7.10.
Good. We shall manage.
Our lives were governed no less by the financial seasons, the quarter days and year ends on which the bills fell due. My grandparents cashed up on the kitchen table, reckoning up the piles of coins with their shaky arithmetic.
57 pence equals 4 and 7.
4 and 9 pence.
Yes. 9 down and carry 4.
They decided who should be paid and who, this time, would have to wait.
Always pay the corn merchant something.
My grandfather advised me when I was 7 or 8.
For if he fails, the beasts starve and the whole enterprise founders.
Neighbours founded. They sold by auction on the premises their lean stock and their old machines and drove away with their furniture roped high on the back of a lorry. We ourselves had some shaky times. The loss one spring of 12 hens to foxes, the cost of tackling the dry rot that was making the end of the house sag, and a hard winter when my grandfather was laid up with pneumonia. He refused to acknowledge that he was getting older and more hindered by his bad leg, injured in a threshing mill years ago. Our steadily accumulating troubles he persisted in seeing as passing clouds.
We're safely through the worst.
You've done well.
Round the corner, over the hump, in sight of the sunlit uplands. All we need now, Jane, is to get shut of some of the old cows and replace them with the young ones.
They're not bad. They're nice beasts and in fair fettle.
Then when young Harry here inherits the place, he'll have the foundation and the years ahead of him to build a prize herd.
His flights of optimism always cheered us, not because we believed in them, but as an expression of his spirit that came to have the pleasure of a repeated joke. But brave as he might be, there was a hint of manic depressive about him. He could, though less often, go the other way and fall into the dumps. Mechanical things in particular had him bothered. And one June afternoon, when the old mowing machine broke down, right in the middle of hay time, he passed, in a moment, from serenity to despair.
Well, that's it. It'll work no more.
It'll mend, surely.
Nay, it's been mended and mended. It'll mend no more.
Nowadays, it only takes 2 or 3 fine days with balers and silage machines to clear the meadows. But then, working with a horse and forks and rakes, hay time could go on for weeks if you're unlucky with the weather. We're always an adventure. We judge the weather by the wireless, and the birds, and the cloud on the mountain. And once we started, we pressed on hard. We enjoyed the bright days working together in the meadows, and so did the Suffolk mare. Dolly was the only thing on the farm that was of the best. Bought cheap as a foal, but grown so strong and comely that strangers were surprised she belonged to the place. In the shafts of the mowing machine, she barely needed commands. My grandmother and I followed behind, raking back the swathe. The afternoon the machine broke down, there was no noise, but rather a deep silence from the moment the rattling blade stopped.
Could we not get somebody out to it?
They don't want the trouble of all machines at this season. Everybody's sending for them.
Well, what shall we do?
Nay.
It was then, as though the instance of fate, that Roscoe arrived. the first encounter in a friendship that was to enliven our plodding days and leave bright memories that remain unfaded after half a lifetime. He came striding down the field from the top gate, a tall man with thinning, sandy hair. He dumped his rucksack and on hands and knees peered with my grandfather through the iron spokes of the wheel.
Loose the horse out, will you? Are there any spanners in the box?
He squirmed about under the machine, breathing hard as he struggled to loosen corroded nuts with our slack adjustable spanner. He beckoned my grandfather to crawl under.
That pinion there, can you see it? It's sheared, worn away. That's why the blade's not engaging.
They crawled out, and Roscoe wiped his oily hands on a clump of hay.
Could you borrow a machine?
Nay, they're all using them while the weather holds.
Will it not mend?
It needs parts. Be a question of where to look for them. They stopped making this grand old model a year or two ago.
A bit longer than that.
Whatever should we do?
Could it be scythed?
The field, this size.
Look at it in years gone by.
There were numbers of them in years gone by. Younger and unlamed.
We could make a start, perhaps. See how we go. I'm in no hurry.
He was never, we discovered, in a hurry. He scythed easily, without effort, but covered a surprising area of ground. When my grandfather and I returned to the field after milking, a wide strip had been cut beyond the point where the mowing machine was stranded. We worked until sunset and walked back, boots wet with dew, towards the smell of supper.
For what we are about to receive, may the Lord make us truly thankful.
Amen. Amen.
My word, what a repast. He raiseth up the poor out of the dust and lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill to set them amongst princes. A princely dinner.
Nay, hardly that. You are a man of faith, then.
What are we without faith? Victims of the meaningless laws of chance. Laurels and hardies struck by planks, doused from buckets, hit by random custards, flotsam on the ocean, chaff in the wind.
It's a mercy, then, you blew this way.
I saw the horse. It was the horse I stopped to look at.
Everybody does.
You'll stay. You're not expected anywhere tonight.
No. Gladly. We should finish cutting that field tomorrow if the weather holds.
He stayed to cut the field, and the next one to it, and to toss and turn the hay and lead it to the barn. It was something fresh to have somebody stay. Hearing him in the mornings, downstairs, or in the yard, I got dressed quickly, as one might in the excitement of Christmas morning, or on a day when there's a new litter of puppies to see.
All is safely gathered in,
my grandmother said at nightfall, when the last load of hay was forked into the loft. There was the usual sense of exhilaration and relief from anxiety, but also a certain sadness that this short, companionable hay time was over, and that Roscoe would be on his way tomorrow.
I'll look out on my travels for parts for the mowing machine while it's fresh in our minds.
I don't know where you'll find them. Fieldings, agricultural engineers can't get hold of them.
No, no, those people are no good. They'd have to be in a scrapyard or an old machine somebody's dumped in the back of the barn. I'll have a bit of a tour round, see what I can spot.
It mustn't distract you further from your business.
Well, I've nothing pressing. It would be a slow job, though, on foot. Do you think I might venture to put forward a suggestion?
Surely.
Do you think I might borrow the horse?
Take Dolly.
We don't need her for a day or two.
I'll take best care of her.
For sure you will. You'll need money, though. We haven't settled with you yet for your work.
No, no, no. Give me a quid or two for the parts. If I have more, I'll spend it.
My grandmother went to the money tin she kept in the base of the clock, and I cleaned up the old saddle and away Roscoe rode. From the first, my grandfather had misgivings, which, when a week passed, he could no longer keep to himself.
Where's he gone? Where's he took the mare?
It'll take time.
It's taking time.
Nobody can say how soon or late he might light on the bits.
It could be far away by now. He could have sold the mare for money.
He refused money. He's left most of his stuff up in his room and his old army greatcoat.
We should perhaps go through his stuff and see what we can discover.
No, we shouldn't do that.
We don't even know who he is.
He's called Roscoe.
So he said. Was that his first name or his surname? How is he not called that at all?
Henry, what has he done us but kindness? What has he brought but cheer?
I never lent the horse before.
My love, you won't lose Dolly. He'll come back with your horse.
And so a few days later he did. The dogs heard them first and raced down the road. They came round the bend, Dolly with strong, dainty footsteps, the dogs at her feet, and Roscoe perched on her back, beaming. My grandmother and I shouted back his greetings. My grandfather greeted the horse.
Ah, Dolly.
Roscoe untied a sack that hung over her flank and extracted a cogwheel.
That's the chap, Squire, isn't it?
Looks like it.
You've done well to find one.
And I got a sack full of extra bits while I was about it.
Whatever has that lot cost?
It's next to nothing. It's only scrap.
It is enough here to build another machine.
Not quite, but I tell you what. I have a complete machine earmarked. Come across it deep in nettles at a steading near Welton. In reasonable nick. Cannibalised. There'll be enough parts on that to see us all out. They want £3.
£3?
We're not committed.
It'll have to be thought about.
We'll think about it later. Come and have a cup of tea. Harry, see to the mare. There's the good lad.
I'm sorry it took so long. I did a day's work at one place and another. Then I got a run of 4 days on a shearing gang on Lord Watts's estate.
Melthorne, would it be?
Melthorne. That's where the time went. We had a couple of pints on the last night when we finished. Then we needed another pint or two next day to put us steadily back on our pins again. Hey, I bought an organ.
An organ?
Well, it's been left in the pub. Can't remember why. And some pictures.
Do you do a bit of dealing, then?
Only really when I've had a drop of pop. I see virtue in things then that might not be apparent to the sober eye. But the pictures are all right. They'd look well on your wall. Do you fancy pictures?
What would they cost?
Oh, nothing. They were thrown in with the organ. A snow scene in the rosy winter twilight. Another with cows wading into the edge of a lake. Oh. I forget what the third is, but all, you know, very serene.
I'd like to see them.
Yeah, got a lot done, one way and another.
I made a good few contacts. I've got a list of jobs lined up. Another shearing, a roof to help a bloke with, and any number of odd days if I want them.
Is that your usual occupation, a job here and a job there?
I do longer stretches. I work in Canada most summers. Construction industry. Have you heard of the St. Lawrence Seaway?
Yes, we've heard of that.
You see a bit of the world.
I see a lot. Of the inside of concrete tunnels.
That's dangerous work. But well paid, I believe.
Well, you've got to make it in the summer. When the cold comes, nearly everything in the construction game closes down. I've drifted south a couple of years to California, followed the sun. But you can have too much of that.
Well, it's not a complaint we have here.
Not since the war.
Well, you miss the visible and orderly rotation of the seasons, you know?
That's what the Lord intended. Seed time and harvest, sunshine and snow.
Quite. Variety within an established pattern.
Moderation in all things.
That's it.
The organ, if I might revert to that theme.
Surely.
The trouble with these alcohol-fueled transactions, foresight is somewhat diminished. Caution tends to be thrown to the wind.
I've known that happen.
I've no abode for the organ. Do you think I might park it pro tem in the corner of your implement shed?
There's space enough there.
Well, it's not a runner at the moment, but it does need all that much work to fix it.
What about your other gear? You won't want to be encumbered with all that if you're only working locally.
Well, might I possibly leave it on top of the organ?
Could he not leave it where it is, in the bedroom?
Would that suit you?
Will you be wanting the room?
Not for the present. It belonged to our Jenny, our daughter. The lad's mother.
There's no call on it for the present.
No.
And so he came to be an established lodger, and to use our house, as he put it, as a refuge and a springboard. He bought a bicycle and rode off to jobs near and far, sometimes for a day, sometimes for weeks. Between times he helped around our place. He made inroads on long-term jobs like ditching and hedge-cutting and repairing walls and roofs that Grandfather had fallen behind with in recent years. Roscoe got on especially well with my grandmother, and they sat up late by the dying fire, holding quiet conversations about incidents and people and the puzzles of existence. One night, I stopped short at the door, overhearing her talking about my parents.
Why they ever needed to go so far in the first place, I don't know. But young people do. You venture far and wide yourself.
Well, there are places where you can earn a lot. You always hope to find opportunities over the horizon.
That's what they thought. Opportunities. Jenny had few enough. Her first husband, Harold, that's the lad's father, was killed in the war. Mm. She worked on the land and she did some hotel work, cleaning. The man that married her, Ernest, was a driver for the milk marketing board, so he hadn't much. They thought they might do better in Australia.
It's a grand place, I believe, a sunny clime.
So they said in the letters. They were going to send for the lad, but they had a number of setbacks. Ernest was ill and he couldn't get a settled job and they've had to move several times. They've got a couple of children of their own now. We don't hear often.
No.
Not as often as we should like. Is there somebody there?
Hello?
Is that you, Harry? Come in. What are you waiting there for? I was telling Roscoe by what twists and turns you came to be here.
That's it, twists and turns. None of us knows where fate might lead.
We don't.
It denies us our goals, but it guides us to unexpected blessings.
It does that.
The blessing for me of all your company.
And for us of yours. Hey, Harry.
People used to say that Roscoe was like a son to my grandparents and a father to me, which was overstating things a bit. He was too different a type of person for that. We were family people, tied, as I remember today, to these fields and fells. He was a loner, never quite without the thought of moving on. But his presence did complete our household, if not exactly as a family member, at least as a sort of representative of the missing generation. Life passed easier for his presence. Grandfather, whom he relieved of some of the burden of work, lost the edge of his anxiety and the weight of his tiredness. I learned from Roscoe to take pleasure in work. One afternoon, when we sat for tea break under a wall we were rebuilding, he said, out of the blue, and quite easily,
I know what it's like to be left. I was left. You think, oh, there must be something wrong with me. You think that, even though it's untrue. Some confidence goes. He's bound to. I resolved to excel in the one sphere that's open to everybody. Work. To do the best I'm able. Folk might say that there's not much scope for making a sparkling job of shoveling sand and cement into a mixer or mucking out a cow buyer. But there are good jobs and bad ones in everything, whether it's evident or not. God knows, and them that's done the job know. You sleep well. You look people in the eye. There's a sense of something right. This section of wall that we're rebuilding, with all respect to them that's done the walls in the past, this section you and me are building will stand long after their work has tumbled down, will leave our mark on the landscape.
You could say we did. That stretch of wall, curving over the rise towards the wood, has stood for 40 years now without needing repair. Sometimes, on days off school, I helped him with his jobs about the neighbourhood. We did quite a lot of building repair work at the old Methodist church, which led to an unforeseeable sequence of events. The church, now alas long stripped of its pews and converted into a fertiliser store, was even then on the downward slope. And Roscoe did some of the smaller jobs without putting in bills. That didn't deter Jack Bates, the circuit steward, from turning up on the paid jobs to do a bit of progress chasing.
Is this all that's getting done all day? Is this measure of thy accomplishment?
Now, there's a tricky bit here over the porch, Jack. Once we're on the flat wall, we'll roar along, we'll gallop.
They'll need to roar and gallop. That's barely made a start.
Don't worry, we're all set to take off, aren't we, Harry?
Were thou late clambering out of bed, hast thou been whiling away be time in pub?
No, we were held up en route. An old lady had a bunged up chimney to sweep.
Yeah, we're paying for this one, Roscoe. I shall have to write in a penalty clause to dwindle thy income if thou hasn't finished by Harvest Festival.
Nearly everybody was rather intimidated by Jack Bates, magistrate, corn merchant and horse dealer, whose family name, painted large on the gable of their premises, had dominated the main street in town for four generations. From the beginning he took against Roscoe as an incomer, ignorant of and caring nothing about the accepted hierarchy of the district. We had barely climbed up the scaffold before his Jowett javelin was back again.
Hey!
What is it?
Where's Sam Scrog?
Gone after the moles.
He was supposed to be assisting me, weren't he?
As and when he's able. There's been an eruption of moles.
The Lord's business won't wait upon an eruption of moles any more than it'll wait upon old ladies' bunged-up chimneys. Tell him from me to leave moles in Firth and come and all thy mortar buckets up for thee.
I'll mention it.
Let's see some industry and diligence. Set this young lad here a more edifying example.
Sam Scrog, a simple nut-brown little man who looked rather like an overgrown relative of his moles, was put upon by church members to do odd jobs and to carry messages to remote brethren of the faith up in the hills. Sam took a shine to Roscoe. He tagged along with us at work and took to following Roscoe into the Fellowship Arms on Saturday nights, even though, having signed the pledge, he could only blow himself up with gassy mineral waters all evening. One Sunday morning, he came to our farm thoroughly deflated. He was without his traps and wore a dark suit and a black tie, with his quiff brill-creamed as though for a funeral. He gravely unburdened himself to Roscoe, squatting on the seat of the still unplayable organ in the corner of the implement shed.
What were you up to with Sam Scrog, then?
He's contemplating taking the strychnine.
Oh, what he does the moles in with?
Yes, I've dropped him in the soup.
How?
Well, there's a bit of a do last night down at the pub. Old Mrs. Gannett's 90th birthday.
A bit of a do? We could hear you from here.
It went on a bit.
I think it did. It was breaking daylight when you came in.
Well, that's the trouble. It hadn't been anticipated to go on so long. The fund they collected gave out, well, the old lady and her pals, were still upright and thrusting out their glasses for refills.
They're two-fisted tipplers, some of those old souls.
So we all let them stump up whatever we've got. We turned the liners of our pockets out.
Well, then, you'll all have to go on shortcomings.
But Sam's money, the money he passed to me when mine ran out, wasn't his own, it now transpires. It vaguely occurred at the time to wonder where he got it from.
Ooh, where had he got it from?
From the church treasurer. It was 2 weeks' collection money.
The Methodist collection money blued in on a boozer.
That's it.
How did he come to have it?
Well, it seems that the treasurer...
Herbert Crowe.
Yes, he hadn't been able to get to the bank.
I heard he'd been tossed by the bull.
Yes, immobilised. So, his missus gave Sam the money to pay in. Apparently it's happened before and he's always been very reliable.
How much did it amount to?
He doesn't know.
And you didn't keep count as you passed it over?
No. We'd all gone so fast and furious by then, received in one hand, I tossed on the counter with the other.
I know who will know what it amounted to.
Who?
Jack Bates, Esquire, J.P.
£13.02.
As much as that?
As much as that, Roscoe. Hast thou got it?
No.
Can't they get hold of it?
Given time.
They'll get the time if they're not careful. They'll get 2 years of time. We hard labour.
It's not his responsibility.
Who asked thee to intervene, Henry? Get on with grooming the horse.
He's done nothing you can put him in jail for.
What? Conspiracy to defraud? Tort? Robbery? Embezzlement? Fraudulent conversion? Sacrilege? Theft as trustee? How many more does thou want?
He weren't the trustee. Herbert Crowe were the trustee.
Herbert's at death's door. Life's pilgrimage is near its end. He handed on this particular baton to Sam Scrog.
It wasn't Sam's fault.
In that case, it were thine.
All right.
He's only ninepence to shilling. He follows thee like a dog. Thou willfully led a trusting and gormless soul into temptation.
That's not an offence at law.
Henry, it's too late in life to set thyself up as a barrack room lawyer. If thou wants to assist, get the floorboards up and restitute the embezzled money.
I've got no £13.
I'll buy that horse off thee. I've offered a time or two before.
And I've refused a time or two before.
Ah, that's a pig-headed old man. It's the height of incongruity, keeping a mare of that quality and grubbing for the living on these desolate acres.
No, do it.
It'd be more rectitudinous to get the horse sold and pay me the feed bills with greater promptitude.
You've arrived with a wide-ranging agenda this morning.
Right, then. I won't trespass no further on my time, Roscoe. I'll put the matter succinctly.
Either I leave here with £13.02, or police will be informed, and law will take its course with thy mole-catching friend.
I've said I take the responsibility.
Thou's also said thou wasn't getting money.
I'll pay it off at 10 bob a week.
Is that what thou offers, Lord God of Hosts? 10 bob a week?
What would he settle for?
Out less than a quid.
Okay.
Plus interest at building society rates.
Okay.
And thy voluntary and heartfelt testimony delivered to the Wednesday evening meeting.
What about?
Out demon drink has been thy undoing.
It wouldn't be unfair to say that.
And I'd better make it ringing and convincing. We want our money's worth.
Nobody anywhere ever complained that Roscoe failed to give them their money's worth. And he did the Methodists especially proud with his testimony. He described the decorous beginning of the evening, when the old lady sipped a sweet sherry and bowed her head in gracious acknowledgement of the serenade of happy birthday, sung by her numerous family and invited friends.
So, I all started with great propriety.
These things do.
That's the snare.
Then, all of a sudden, it seemed the place was full. Everybody was sweating and shouting, and Percy Simcock belting it out on the piano with the pints bouncing on the top.
It broke his mother's heart.
The darts team came back from a away match. A platoon of ladies came in from the Women's Institute next door, still humming Jerusalem. Then the aged, the lame, the halt and the blind, roused by the hullabaloo, descended from the hills. A whole legion of forgotten folk darkened the horizon, their crutches creaking and their wheelchairs squeaking as they converged on the Fellowship Arms like an army marching to the sound of guns.
More like the Gadarene slime.
Champagne all round, somebody shouted. The corks popped and the bubbly flowed.
Wine is a mocker.
It is indeed, Mrs. Cormorant. A knot of ladies, long fallen into the decrepitude of old age, formed round Mrs. Gannett, all banging the table for more champagne, except one individualist who stuck to double whiskies and peppermints, one in each hand.
Cities of the plain.
As for the rest of them, they couldn't be budged from the bubbly. If it's good enough for the Dawn Patrol, they said, it's good enough for us. Here's to the next one to die.
And all of them with one foot in grave.
Is that what all our money went on? Champagne for those moribund crones?
Well, not just for them, Mr. Bate. It irrigated the whole assembly, and at such a pace we couldn't slide money over the counter fast enough. We could have done with a shovel. It half dawned on me as I shoved the coins through lakes of beer slopped on the counter. That's the widow's mite bravely cresting the wave. That's the shilling, hard-earned and willingly given, of Mrs. Barrow, who reared a family of 13.
And drove the bus.
Drove the bus as well. A fat woman had knocked Percy Simcock off the piano stool and was pounding it out fortissimo with rings sparkling on her fingers. It was like a honky-tonk on the night of the big round-up. There was a concertina going and a trumpet. The bearings of the bar pumps overheated and set fire to the packets of potato crisps hung up on the wall. The policeman fell dead drunk out through the window onto the pavement. Sam Scrogg, true to the principles learned in this hall, stuck all night to pop.
The one righteous man.
He was so full of gas, he was ready to float up to the roof. At exactly the moment, three of the old ladies slid down to the floor. Youths were climbing round the wall and maidens doing handstands.
Shameful.
Relays of respectable married women, members of the Women's Institute, danced on the tables, flinging their skirts about, while gentlemen of all classes, vicar and schoolmaster, gamekeeper and postman, and all the horny-handed sons of toil swayed forward to drop half-crowns into their stocking tops.
It sounds like a remarkably good thrash.
Nay, Thatcher, not at your age.
At an age. I'm sorry to have missed all this.
Roscoe, I didn't summon me here to make sin palatable. Thou weren't invited to peddle a travel brochure to damnation. Thou were here to abase thyself and rant lesson home.
Oh, we don't want no lessons rammed home on us. He's given a very fair and impartial account.
I've never heard anything so shameful. But I agree. We haven't turned out on a wet night to have lessons rammed home on us. We can be left to draw our own conclusions. We're not Catholics or Mamadans that need to be told what to think.
Whatever our views, I think we'd all agree to conclude by thanking Mr. giving us an enlightening and informative evening.
That's enough. Bring that tax on proceedings, Reverend. Don't bother with last hymn. For God's sake, pronounce the benediction.
Roscoe went abroad in spring, but returned early the next winter with the first flurries of snow. We walked him all round the farm, though there was nothing new to see. The dogs ran to him. He stopped to admire Dolly, which was something of a required courtesy. He caught sight of the organ he'd left in the implement shed and said he'd get down to fettling it this time. Through the years as I grew up, Roscoe came and went, leaving behind him an accumulation of bargains. A rickety hat stand, a good barometer, a sofa with broken springs, all bought like the organ in a flush of optimism brought on by what he spoke of as a pint or two.
You'll be furnishing a complete home at this rate.
It'd be a queer sort of a place to live in.
But in the end, this habit of Roscoe's left nobody laughing. Just after Christmas of 1953, I think, Tadger Schofield, the old Methodist, came to the door one night.
Oh, hello, Tadger. Come in.
The compliments of the season.
And to you, Tadger. Give me a coat. Go through.
Henry.
Tadger.
Hello, Roscoe. You back again.
Happy New Year, Tadger.
And to you, Roscoe, and
what
many of them.
Brings you here this cold night?
Oh, I've been to my daughter's. There's something I ought to mention to you.
Sit down and get a warm first. Get out of the chair, Cap. Now, will you have a glass of ginger wine?
Thank you. What exotic strands have you come back from this time, Roscoe?
Only Canada again.
That's your regular haunt.
Well, I got a good contact in Montreal.
Ah, you'll need that.
Here you are, Tadger. You can eat a couple of mince pies.
I can. Your health, Jane. And a happy new year to all of you.
And to you.
And to your family.
Hey, perhaps, Roscoe, you might come down again and give a talk to the Wednesday evening meeting. An itinerant life, the pleasures and vicissitudes thereof.
It has its ups and downs, hasn't it, Roscoe?
You can never tell.
Oh, it'd all be fresh to us. Some of us have seldom been outside the parish.
Except them that went to the war.
Jack Bates visited Paris once to see a rugby match.
What did he make of Paris?
He disapproved. I suppose we all get more sanctimonious with age. We become censorious of pastimes we can no longer fully participate in.
Oh, no, don't deny
some of that. I won't deny that opinion was divided on Roscoe's last oration, but it stimulated thought, and I don't doubt stirred up some forgotten memories. Hey, I remember a charabang outing to the Grey Cock on Whit Monday, 1912.
Horse-drawn charabang?
Well, there were no tells. I've been on some wild sprees, I can tell you, before I've mended my ways.
You got about a bit.
And Margaret Cormorant were by no means so rectitudinous as she might have liked to give the impression of in latter years. I remember.
Now then, Tadger, that'll do.
What was it you called to tell us?
Tell you?
Well, you said you'd come because you'd something to tell us.
Oh, so I did. You know, it completely slipped my mind with the warmth of your greeting and looking onward to the coming year and reminiscing about years gone by. Oh, I know what it was. Did you know, Henry, there's a certain amount of smoke emanating from your barn?
Smoke emanating?
Issuing under the door. And would that be in order? Have you got a boiler in there?
There's no boiler in there.
If there's smoke, there's fire.
Oh, heck.
Move out. Out of the way. Get the hose out of the shipper.
Let's get the beast out first.
I thought I'd better mention it.
Out, Betsy. Get out. Out, Carabelle.
I thought it couldn't be completely in order.
You did well, Tadger. Hurry, run down to the telephone and dial 999 for the fire brigade.
Roll the hose out. Turn the water on.
Come on, Dolly. Keep the hose here, Jane. Stop it spreading. Henry, give me a hand to fill some buckets from the trough.
I could see the glow in the sky from the telephone box a mile away. By the time the volunteer fire brigade had been assembled and driven from town, the fire had all but burned itself out. Part of the barn roof had fallen in. The remains of hay lay charred and sodden. Water flowed in runnels across the yard. My grandparents, Roscoe and Tadger, sitting exhausted in the kitchen, gave what account they could to the fire officer, who grunted and wrote slowly in big writing. Tadger sat in his shirt sleeves. He'd used his jacket to slog at the edge of the fire, and it had gone up in flames.
I knew it weren't in order.
You did very well, Tadger.
I knew it was irregular.
You were very alert to spot it.
You've saved us from worse loss.
I haven't lived in vain, then.
No, you haven't lived in vain, Tadger.
Well, then.
Smoke still hung heavy in the air the next morning. The fire had not reached the hay stored in the loft above the outbuildings, but that amount is a less than half of a poorish year's crop. There would not be enough to feed the sheep until the new grass grew in spring. My grandparents stood together, grey and dejected, conferring in the cold of the yard. Then they came back into the house, and Grandfather put on his best suit and went to see Jack Bates.
More feed on credit? Thou'rt in a bad case to ask, Henry. Thou still hasn't paid last year's bill.
I've given you some of it.
It's costing thee interest, this debt. It's a festering sore to thee.
I mean to get rid of it.
Well, thou'rt going a bad way about it, then, letting thy hay go on fire. What happened?
We don't know. A tramp, perhaps, or some drunks at night, sitting down for a smoke.
There could be a suspicion thou'rt after the insurance money.
It wasn't insured, or I wouldn't be here asking for credit.
Listen, if thou can't pay the normal bill, art thou going to pay double?
We'll pay all right. We've never failed.
Thou turtling ever faster down slippery slope. Thou'rt accumulating debts like an Indian peasant. Thou'll finish as a serf to thy creditors.
We've prospects, don't worry.
Listen, thou's no prospects any different from what thou's always had. Thou's only one cashable asset. That horse of thine. I'll take it off the hands. That'll solve all the feed problems at one stroke.
No thanks.
Right. Come back if thou changes your mind. Good morning.
Is that what he said?
Over his shoulder, walking away.
Well, you're not going to change your mind, are you?
Not about that. He's not going to get Dolly.
Look, I've nothing now, I'm skinned. But I shall have a fair sum by late summer. There's a tunnel job in Canada starting early April. As a matter of fact, I wrote only yesterday to my contact in Montreal to advance me the fare. Could you get a bridging loan from the bank on the strength of that?
We've never had a bank account. They wouldn't kick off by advancing a loan.
No. Would you consider selling some of the cattle?
They'd make little. They're grand beasts, but they're past it as milkers.
Oh, only the butchers that bid.
We need the milk check.
I'll put the roof back and the barn for you. At least that's no problem. A temporary job, corrugated iron. I know where I can pick up some sheets.
Oh, that's a help.
There's only one thing for it. We shall have to sell half of the ewes to feed the rest.
Yes, but then how shall we have enough lambs to sell at the back end to see us through next winter?
That's some time away. We could have turned the corner by then.
Hey, listen to him. How would we have got through without his eternal hopes?
There have been worse times, and we've never found it yet.
The 10 miles to market was too far for my grandfather, so Roscoe walked the sheep there. It was always a problem in the hills to get transport. Cattle haulage men wouldn't come out for small numbers when they could get full loads nearer home. It was moonlight when he set off. Moonlight diffused through early morning fog, which froze on the backs of the sheep and dogs and made them all into shadows before it swallowed them. Another shadow went trotting behind them, which we recognised as Sam Scrog, sprung from nowhere. The day passed, and darkness had long fallen again when Roscoe returned. He drove into the yard in an ancient cattle wagon.
What's this then, Roscoe?
It's what I've ended up with.
What do you mean?
Well, it's been a funny kind of day.
We'd better go inside.
Oh, you're frozen, Roscoe. I'll put the kettle on.
Thank you. It came in a bit parky after dark.
You were saying it had been a funny kind of day.
Long day.
Did you get them there in good time?
Yes, a bit of a struggle. Poor old things wanted to settle down and sleep at the roadside.
It's a long walk.
Others had brought sheep from further. One chap reckoned he'd legged it 14 miles.
So there were a lot of sheep for sale, then?
Not too many. We got a fair price for them, 107.
That's not bad.
So where is it, Roscoe?
The money?
Yes. Can you place it on the table?
Not all of it at the moment.
What does that mean?
Well, it's all accountable for.
Well, then.
But it's not in a form that can be readily placed on the table.
What form is it in, then, Roscoe?
The cattle wagon I drove into the yard. That's the form the proceeds of the sale have taken, I'm afraid. That represents some part of the cash, an investment.
What can we do with a wagon?
We want no investment. We need the cash now for feed till springtime, or it's all up with the stock and all up with us.
Yes, I lost sight of essentials in the heat of the moment.
Oh, Roscoe.
I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me.
Were you drunk?
I'd had a pint or two.
Out of the sheep money?
We wouldn't begrudge that.
No, out of my own money. Frank Colley's been owing me £10 for a drainage job a year or two now. Well, he was selling some pigs, so I went and looked at him across the pens, put the squeeze on. We intended just to have a pint or two and some pop for Sam and a sandwich before starting for home. But people you know come in and you find you've put away a bit more than cold prudence might commend.
Some do.
Anyway, coming out of the pub, we stopped to see what was doing at the dead stock auction. Machinery and troughs and whatnot that was going on in the market yard.
Go on.
Well, they'd come to the vehicles, a couple of tractors and the cattle wagon. Sam Scrogg might seem a bit simple, but he has a sharpish business mind. That wagon'd be worth a bid, he said. There's more than enough folk up in the hills can't get nobody to come for their stock.
How much did you pay?
Well, there's 20 quid, a bit more left.
You paid over 80 for that clapped-out trog?
I was seized with the vision of purring along these roads, mopping up the transport job over the whole range of the hills. All of them round me were urging me on as the bids came in, promising their business.
They would.
In the enthusiasm of the moment, I didn't see how we could fail. It looked like the goose that had laid the golden eggs. It'd make money to replace the sheep we sold, and once everything was going at full throttle, ample funds to rejuvenate the herd as well.
That was drink talking.
That's right, I'm afraid. I knew the moment the hammer came down that I'd erred.
Could it be fettled up a bit and sold?
How could we pay for the job? Who'd buy it?
Could it not be used as it is and earn a bit of something as we go along?
We wouldn't be paid as we went along. When do folk pay transport bills?
Quarterly.
Some and more at year end.
Yes.
So that wouldn't help a lot toward buying feed when the hay runs out in mid-February.
Whatever will we do?
There's only one thing left to do, isn't there?
And so it was that in the end, Dolly had to be sold. Jack Bates's men manoeuvred their horse box about the yard while he counted out the notes on the kitchen table.
97, 98, 99, 100. And I'll take 3 back for luck. Is that all right?
Yes.
We'll be fulfilling my order for hay and feed tomorrow, and so should I take another 55 to save the toil of coming down to the office to pay?
Take it.
And £19.6 outstanding from last account.
There's going to be nothing left.
I'll be blessed with peace of mind. They'll all note. I'll be able to look World and his wife straight in the eye.
We can look anybody straight in the eye, and always have.
Uh-huh. So all that leaves £22.14. Is that right?
It'll do.
Good will come out of this, thou'll see, Henry.
Aye.
Thou should thank God for thee tribulations. They've shown thee way to prudence and solvency.
Take what's yours and go.
All right. Where's our itinerant friend today? Has he resumed his career of vagrancy?
Just go, will you?
Come on, get this horse aboard. We haven't all afternoon.
So Dolly went. Roscoe had already gone, quietly and in contrition. The cattle wagon remained. We couldn't sell it, or after a few weeks even start it. It sank on its cracked tyres. Nettles grew up around it, and hens took to nesting inside. At haytime, we managed to borrow an old Ferguson tractor to take Dolly's place. It did the job, after a fashion, but gave my grandfather some anxious days. We finished dead tired, with the fields so roughly cut in places that we drove the cows in straight away to graze off the quiffs of uncut grass before anybody saw them. Months passed, without any news of Dolly or Roscoe. Then we heard of both of them on a single day.
Dolly's got a new home, I've been told.
Was Jack Bates sold her?
Yes.
Who to?
Last Wednesday, to Mrs. Newby.
Oh, is that Lord Melthorne's daughter?
Niece.
That should be a good home.
She's a keen horsewoman.
Where did you hear?
At market, Jack Bates's man, Willie Platt.
What did she fetch?
I don't think he knew. It was a private sale.
It'd be a good price if Jack Bates was selling.
He gives nowt away.
Well, that's good. She'll be happy, cantering about in parkland, not work too hard.
It's some consolation.
Good news.
Yes.
There's been something else today.
Something else?
A letter arrived in the post.
From Jenny?
No, from Roscoe.
Oh. What's he want?
Shall I read it?
If you like.
He says he was too late to get the tunnelling job. Whoever it is in Montreal didn't kick through, as he puts it, with the fare money.
Wisely. He'd have done something daft with it.
Now then. So, I got a job logging at this lumber mill here, which pays less but goes on in the winter, at least for some. They're a good bunch of fellas. Most here are French-Canadians, and we get on well enough without mixing too much. Grand country, blue skies and sunshine, but you miss the rainy days, as we once discussed. I often think of you. Has Harry left school yet? I'm sorry to have landed you all in the cart. I seem to have a fatal knack of creating these debacles. I cannot say how contrite I am after all your kindness. I'm resolved in the future to keep off the pop when engaged in commercial transactions.
It's a bit late for that.
It shows he's taken it to heart. Oh, then there's a bit for Harry about places he's visited en route. Well, read it for yourself if you're interested.
Leave it there.
I was delighted that we'd heard from Roscoe, but after a few re-readings, the letter had a depressing effect. There was something of a final tone about it, as though what had happened was beyond remedy. I left school the following Christmas. I had hope for a job at one of the bigger farms, and it would have helped my grandparents to have been relieved of my board. But our own place, even with fewer ewes, was becoming too much for my grandfather alone.
It's harder with every passing month for him to get about. He won't admit it, but we can see that, can't we, Harry? He'll need your nimble feet when the rain sets in and makes the earth heavy.
So I stayed. It was what was expected. There was no argument about such things in those days. But I regretted missing the adventure and fun of working on a big farm, in the company of other boys. About our place, even when spring arrived, there was a feeling of old age, of time having gone by and taken the bright hours with it. I remember that autumn, working alone on a fallen wall and looking across the moorland at the abandoned farms along the flank of the hill. I thought it could not be long before we gave up as well. We all dug in mentally to face another winter. Just before it set in, on a day in November, when the wind was snatching the last leaves from the boughs, Roscoe came back. The dogs heard him first and ran down the road to meet him. He was not alone. He led Dolly and her foal.
Henry! Henry!
What is it?
Come to the door.
Roscoe, what's this?
I've brought her home.
And the young'un?
That's a bonus if you want it.
Oh, Dolly. Dolly, you'd better come in.
No, I won't impose.
Come in, Roscoe. It's been a long time.
My grandfather thawed out. The place began to come back to life. We enjoyed the company of man and mare, all the more keenly for having been without them. Roscoe, in fact, didn't stay long that visit, and most mornings he rode off early on his bike to work on a job with which he'd embroiled himself in his negotiations to get Dolly back.
She hadn't had her long, Mrs. Newby. I'm surprised she was ready to part at all.
Well, she wasn't at first. Very frosty. I thought she was going to pull the bell, have the footman frog-march me down the drive.
So how did you soften her heart?
I announced I'd pay in cash. Ooh. In Canadian dollars. I don't know what it did to her heart, but her ears went up.
They're quick to sniff a bit of tax evasion, the horse fraternity.
What clinched it in the end? The septic tank's cracked and broken, as you can plainly smell from the end of the drive. Whoa! The builders apparently promised but don't come. So, I made her an offer for both horses, in cash, in dollars, plus an undertaking to sort out the drains. If you don't want the foal, she can be mine. But can I leave her here for the present?
Of course. Shall you have a use for the foal?
Well, I might. I've had it in mind for some time. A sort of ambition.
Well, go on.
Well, I've had thoughts that I might someday settle round here.
You must somewhere. You won't want all this travelling round when you're older.
Your stuff, sir. And your bike.
Well, yes, I've put down some roots of a sort. I'm not unknown. People speak.
You're very well known.
I thought I might apply for the tenancy of one of these abandoned places. Perhaps take on a couple eventually.
They're there for the asking. Nobody wants them.
That's what I thought. If it's not impertinent to broach it...
Say what's on your mind.
Well, building up stock, that'd take a year or two and it'd need financing. I'd have to continue to work abroad for a time.
So you mean for us to look after the animals when you're away?
Could I ask that? Is it practical?
Within limits. Harry does most of a man's work now.
It ain't thinking about Roscoe. We'll have to look closer into the practical details.
It worked quite well. In return for tending and feeding the stock that Roscoe was building up, we had the yield from it, which made a small but welcome improvement in income. Meanwhile, he came to an arrangement with the agent, whereby he was to get free tenure for 10 years of an abandoned farm along the hill in return for restoring the derelict buildings.
It looks like a ruin, but basically, it's a very sound dwelling.
You can make yourself comfortable here, Roscoe, and it's not short of outbuildings.
Well, I'll get a roof on them first, then I can move the stock in.
That's it. Have some money coming in from the start.
I'll do just one room to camp in and defer the main work on the house until I've time to make a real job of it.
It'll repay patience. Done as you can do it, Roscoe, it'll be an embellishment to the hillside and stand, I don't doubt, for another 200 years.
It'll see me out. I don't know of a better place to live the balance of my days.
It'll suit you, Roscoe, and it'll please us for you to be here. Eh, Harry?
The building job was too big to do in the intervals of his comings and goings, and to make a real impression on it, he determined to devote the whole summer of the following year. He went off to Canada, leaving £180 with me to buy in building materials, ready for a start in March or April. But he did not return in either month, nor in that spring, nor was he back by year end.
Something must have befell him.
Or, as we've said, just held him up. We can't know.
It's dangerous work he goes off to. That's why it pays so much.
He's been longer away than this.
But not with everything left pending. The slates and pipes and stones stacked up outside his house waiting.
There'll be an explanation.
That he'd have wrote, surely.
You'd think so. But he's a poor correspondent. He's never wrote, only the once.
Something's wrong.
We wrote to the logging mill where we knew he once worked, and to the St. Lawrence Seaway, and to some other places we had the addresses of. My grandmother stopped the policeman to ask if the authorities might have any means of tracing him somewhere in North America, which, of course, they hadn't. It was only then, thinking about him and what might have happened, that we realised how little we'd ever really known about Roscoe's life.
He was in the army in the war, I know that.
He told Harry that he'd been left. What do you mean, as a child, or left by wife and family?
Nay, He didn't seem like a family man.
He might have been left and adapted his ways accordingly.
That's possible.
And would this contact be he spoke of in Montreal, who sent him his boat fare?
I sometimes didn't.
Sometimes didn't.
A lady, you think, perhaps?
He'd have said if it was a lady. Mm. He wouldn't have said contact.
Something's happened. He wouldn't go for good without a word and leave everything. His beasts are here, and his sheep, and his young horse.
His home is here.
There's nowhere else we know of.
No. Do you know what I think might have detained him?
No.
He might have gone and lost everything he'd saved up in some gambler's throw to multiply his funds.
Well, that's in character. He's prone enough to that kind of thing.
Then have had to stay and start again.
It's possible.
He'll be back in due season. I've every faith in that.
Well,
he'll return in all our good time.
But he didn't. Not in her time, not in my grandfather's. And by now he can hardly still be living. His stock we kept, and I suppose something of their strain survives in the animals I have now. I've kept the pictures he gave my grandmother, and the barometer. The cattle wagon went for scrap. I don't know what happened to the organ. Sam Scrog came looking for him at intervals over the years, but most of those who knew him have moved away by now, or died, or forgotten. Sometimes I go for months without really thinking about him, and then some trivial thing about the place brings him back to mind in a sharp, vivid memory, like a still photograph. I remember looking up from the broken mowing machine and seeing him coming down from the top gate.
In Roscoe's Time by Don Howarth, Roscoe was played by Kenneth Cranham and the narrator by Russell Dixon. Henry was Geoffrey Banks. Jane, Anne Rye. Jack Bates was Stephen Thorne. Tadger, Ronald Herdman. And Mrs. Cormorant, Anne Arris. Roscoe's Time was directed in Manchester by Kay Patrick.